our thoughts are with Jake Muzzin, and that is first and foremost, hoping for a quick recovery for Jake, that everything is okay, and A, for his health, and then B, that he can get back to the Maple Leafs as quickly as possible. But here is the question. Which defenseman would you like to see replace Jake Muzzin for the Maple Leafs in Game 3? Is it Marty Marinson or is it Rasmus Sandin? Ziggy has put his hand up for Sandin. I've said, you know what? Sandin, he's a big part of the future. I don't mind the idea of going with the veteran hand in Marinson. Well, 700 votes are in and 81% are saying Rasmus Sandin. David Amber, what do you expect?
Hey, guys. First of all, Ziggy, welcome back. It's been a while. It's good to have you back.
Thanks.
On the airwaves. I'm going to go with the majority here. I'm going to say Sandin, and I just think, you know what Marinson is. You see his upside. You see where his deficits lie. And with Sandin, there's a lot of upside. And sometimes players get thrust in these situations, and they rise to the occasion. So I'd like to think you're in a situation where you're not facing elimination. I'm not saying you have a big margin of error, but Sandin might be a really interesting guy to throw in there, and he can move the puck. He works well with the team we saw yesterday, and he might be the guy that could fill the void.
Yeah, I'm with you on Sandin. I think he brings a lot to the team. I was pushing for him all show. I'd like to see a little bit more, I guess, offense creativity from the back end. I think they're going to need it, the Leafs. They've played well in games 1 and 2. I love it. Matthews and Tavares finally get on the board, but I still feel like there's something missing from the game overall. Just I want to see more offensive chances. I know they're getting more zone time than Columbus, but watch the way Columbus is back in. Watch Werenski, Jones. They jump in every chance they get. They really help the front end with Columbus kind of generate more chances. And I think the Leafs are just kind of missing that extra little bit, or just generate a little bit more. And I think Sandin will bring it.
You hold a high bar, Ziggy, because I really thought the Leafs were dominant yesterday. I thought they were very, very good. I think they controlled the game almost start to finish. And they weren't rewarded really for as well as they played until finally they found the board with Matthews and then Tavares. I liked what Toronto brought yesterday. And, you know, I think that was textbook Toronto. Control the puck, control the tempo, control the zone time, outchance your team. Don't surrender possession until you have to. I'm sure they were checking off every single box. They were playing with purpose, I thought, from the first shift on. They enforce themselves physically at times as well. I mean, the Kyle Clifford hit right in that third minute of play. The guys were in our studio were saying this is exactly what Toronto needs to do. You heard Anthony Stewart and Kevin Bieksa saying this is the they really impose themselves physically at times. I really liked what Toronto brought. You know, Sandin could help that. Matriculating the puck up the ice and moving everything forward and the stretch passes. And I think he does deliver a lot of that. And that's maybe what you're referring to, just having answers on the back end and maybe provide a little offense as well. So I do think he's a good solution, but I was really impressed with the way Toronto played. And if Jake Muzzin hadn't got injured at the end, you know, I think the whole narrative today would be how great Toronto played, and we wouldn't be focused at all on any negatives, but not knowing the Muzzin situation, at least at this point moving forward, is that one kind of dark cloud sitting over the team at this point.
With David Amber, and David, I'm with you 100%. That was a fantastic effort start to finish last night. And yet you know me, and if Elliot Friedman happens to be up and listening, he's probably thanking goodness that it's not Friday, because it means he's not on and has to put up with my psychological scarring from some 35 years of cheering for this team. But I'm going to throw three scenarios at you that occurred pre-COVID, and you can either tell me why it's going to be different, or you can agree with me and have some hesitation. They lost 6-2 at home to Chicago. In their next game, they won 5-2 at Nashville. They played a home-and-home with Pittsburgh in February. On the 18th of that month, they got dismantled on the road. Two nights later, they played arguably, pre-COVID, their best game of the season in beating the Penguins. Two nights after that, on the 22nd of February, they got embarrassed by Carolina. That was the David Ayers Zamboni driver game. And then three nights after that, in their next game, they went down to Tampa Bay and beat the Lightning 4-3. So this team has shown consistently the ability to bounce back after tough games. They bounced back in game two after a not so bad game one, except for the fact that they didn't score. As a Leafs fan who's watched this team all year long, understanding there was a 4+ month break, why should I believe that they will take what they did in game two and transfer it over and continue it on in game three? Because I've been burned by the inconsistency before.
Scott, are you lying on a couch right now? Because you need someone outside my pay grade needs to help you through the things that are keeping you.
Elliot Friedman is thanking God that he is not on right now.
I mean, you're citing three very valid examples from, you know, what was supposed to be an 82 game schedule. And, you know, Ziggy will tell you this, how the guys perform in January and February in the dog days of the National Hockey League season is far different than playoff time when everyone's supposed to be on point. I mean, they're now put into this bubble. They're away from their families. They have nothing to focus on right now except hockey. They understand. They're sitting there at the breakfast buffet right now watching the New York Rangers packing their bags and leaving. I mean, this is very real, right? What happened in February against Carolina or Pittsburgh or whatever is so immaterial. And it's not to say you don't have a reason to. It's not like we're sitting there saying, okay, well, who are the Leafs going to play next? They're even the series. They look good. I get it, but you know, I don't think there's going to be some sort of letdown going into game three. Columbus might come out and set the tempo and be the better team in game three. And that might happen because Columbus is a very good team. They have stifling defense. They have a very effective forecheck. They're a good counterpunch team. And clearly they have a goalie they're comfortable with in Korpisalo. But the notion that the Leafs are just going to come in and say, well, all right, we've done our business. We're going to win this series and lay an egg in game three. I don't think anything's showing us that should be the case. They very well could have won game one. Freddie Anderson had that one unfortunate goal get in from Cam Atkinson. And they dominated by pretty much any metric game two. So I think they should feel pretty comfortable. I think, you know, we've witnessed a lot in the last 50 years with this Leafs team. I understand that. But, you know, this group specifically doesn't have to exercise the demons of playoff pass from the Maple Leafs. So you can rest assured, I think, that the Leafs are going to come out and play a good game. And whether Columbus will make the necessary adjustments and beat them is yet to be seen. But I don't think we're going to see something like we saw in January where there was just a complete lack of consistency from this group.
Yeah, I agree with you. I don't see the letdown happening. It did cross my mind, though, when they scored that goal. I was thinking, and it's not just the Leafs, and I understand there's been questions around their inconsistency this year, but usually when you play that well for that long and you finally get that goal, it's like you don't relax, but you kind of take a deep breath, and it's like, oh, we got one, and then you lay off a little bit, right? I was kind of looking for that, and they showed me last night that's not the case, and I'm with you. I don't see them laying off in game three. I think we're going to see the same amount. I think it's going to be even better. I think their game's going to get even better when Nylander and Marner actually start to get on the board, and they're a bit of the, you know, they're going to be the part of the conversation going forward, saying, okay, we need these guys. We need Marner to get going. I still think he's not quite there, and earlier in the show I was saying how confidence is such a big thing. But he might not have that opportunity to get those, you know, couple phantom assists or to get the tap in back door. It's going to be one of those tight checking series, start to finish, and him and Nylander are probably going to have to just dig a little bit deeper. I mean, I don't know how you saw either of their games in the, you know, games one and two, but I don't think they're going to have the opportunity to kind of, I guess, feel good about themselves in a sense where every inch they're going to get, they're going to have to work for.
Yeah, you know, if you're Sheldon Keefe, the beauty of that is, yes, Marner and Nylander, you know, haven't maybe lived up to the billing thus far in the series. Although I thought Marner was much improved in game two. He was invisible in game one. He was creating offense in game two. He was actually expanding his game, not to just be a facilitator, but he did take more shots and shot attempts than you'd usually see Mitch Marner play. So he's sort of saying, okay, if this is what you're giving me, I'm going to take it, which I thought was a real sign of maturity and a move in the right direction. And above and beyond that, Sheldon Keefe, I like the move he made, you know, reuniting Matthews and Marner, putting Nylander back with Tavares. I think it worked by all accounts. And, you know, that's the beauty of what's at the Leafs' disposal, right? This wealth of talent up front. I mean, if you're John Tortorella, poor John Tortorella is looking around. The Leafs have four players that finished in the top 45 in scoring during the regular season in the Big Four. And if John Tortorella is looking up and down his bench, you know, he had one player finish in the top 70 in scoring in the league. You know, people keep saying, oh, we saw what Columbus did last year against Tampa. Well, there's no Panarin, no Duchesne, no Dzingel, no Bobrovsky, and goaltending hasn't been an issue, but they're missing a lot of those game breakers. You know, I think what's incumbent on the Leafs is to come out with a vengeance tomorrow, take the lead, and force Columbus to play an uncomfortable game. They don't like playing catch-up. They don't have the firepower to play catch-up, really. They play great when it's a tie game. They play exceptional when they have the lead, and they must be the most frustrating team to play against. But, you know, if the Leafs can sit there and come out of the gate strong, take the lead, then things bode really well for them. So, yeah, if Nylander and Marner can be part of this, and I think both of those players look better in Game 2 than in Game 1, then that's a huge, huge benefit. Matthews looks like an absolute beast, and Tavares had, you know, the best game he's had in a long time that I can remember. Boy, he was a force creating so much offense, and he was rewarded finally late in the game with that second goal.
David Amber with us. This is Leadoff, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Elsewhere, David, let's start with Carolina's pretty quick and effective dissection of the New York Rangers. Twofold. Number one, because the Rangers are one of those younger teams that are on the come up, but they're not quite there yet. And obviously they signed their star in Panarin in free agency last summer. Were you surprised at how quickly Carolina pushed New York out of this thing? And number two, I know he didn't start or play yesterday, but is Henrik Lundqvist's time with the Rangers up, even though he's got a year left on his deal?
Well, I'll start with the first question, and I was surprised that Carolina swept this series. And quite frankly, I thought the Rangers would win this series simply because they were dominant against Carolina during the regular season. I know after a four-month layoff, I guess I shouldn't have put too much credence in that, but it seemed like the matchup favored New York. And if you remember that there was this vote about the return to play and how they were going to go about it, and only two teams dissented. One of those two teams was Carolina, and a big part of that was, well, we don't like the fact that we're a six seed and we've got to go up against a team we struggled with all year. I was surprised. I guess you don't sleep on Rod Brind'Amour, and you don't sleep on that group of talented players, and they did it without Dougie Hamilton. So I mean, that really, you know, speaks volumes to how good and how deep that Carolina team is. Aho, Svechnikov, if you haven't had a chance to see them, no players have been better than those two so far in the postseason. Svechnikov, the hat-trick in Game 2. Aho was the best player on the ice yesterday. So, you know, they're going to be a hard out for whomever they end up meeting up with. As far as Lundqvist goes, no, I don't think there's going to be a buyout or anything like that. I think Henrik Lundqvist is one of those guys. He's built up enough equity. He's done enough for that franchise. He took them to a Stanley Cup final. He's won a Vezina. He's you know, going to the Hall of Fame. He's one of those guys that, you know, he's going to play out his contract with the Rangers. And barring him asking for a trade, which was one of the discussion points we had at this year's trade deadline, would Henrik Lundqvist like to go to another team potentially to try and win that elusive cup? Barring that happening, Henrik Lundqvist is going to retire a Ranger, be an all-time Ranger great, and he'll have one more year. And I imagine he'll play through that year, and he'll keep mentoring Shesterkin and Georgiev. And in my opinion, it'll be a walk off into the sunset and probably right onto the front page of GQ magazine. I mean, this guy is he's got everything going for him. He's one of those guys you love, but you love to hate, right? It's just it's too much, right? It's like Clooney or something. So, you know, he's just too much of a good thing. So, you know, great all around guy. And I expect fully for him to finish his career in New York as a Ranger. And then whatever he wants to do, he'll do, whether it's be a broadcaster or again, you know, he wants to be some big European model. I'm sure those opportunities will be there too.
Great competitor. One of the toughest guys to go against, you know, kind of works for everything he gets, and it's tough. I was telling Scotty yesterday, we brought it up, and it's hard watching guys at the end of their career. You either win the cup and you go off in the sunset, or you have a younger guy come in and take your job. So it's tough, right? It's like a guy wins a cup, you're like, oh, maybe he could play a couple more years. He's still playing well. Or a young guy comes and takes it. Very often does a guy just, you know, get to decide. You know, there's some players that they want to, you know, squeeze out every single year they can. I feel like, you know, the King, he wants to, you know, Lundqvist wants to win a cup. It just, obviously every player wants to win one, but he seems like he's one of those guys where, you know, I mean, he's kind of hanging on for it. I did want to touch on the West, though. Mm-hmm. I want to know who everyone, obviously the talks around McDavid and what he did in game two, and can him and Draisaitl take Edmonton to that next level and, you know, knock off Chicago and go on a little run here. Who's looked good out West so far in your eyes?
Well, I mean, you brought up McDavid. Where do you even put that second goal he scored in his hat trick yesterday? I mean, an all-time great goals. It's in that conversation, my God, right? Yeah. We all remember the Lemieux against Minnesota, I think it was in 91, where he shreds through the whole team and literally dekes out the whole team. It was one of those, like, pee-wee kind of one of those goals, but it happens to be man against man. You know, that goal by McDavid, just the hand-eye, the skill, the speed, the finish, it was unbelievable. Yeah, I mean, Edmonton's an interesting team. You know, when you're not talking about the top four seeding teams and the teams that we're seeing right now in the qualifying round, Edmonton is one of those very intriguing teams. I'm worried, you know, for Winnipeg with all these injuries. It's just, there's just too many injuries right now for them to be a viable team to make a deep run. And now they're, you know, having to win back-to-back games to keep their season alive. You know, Nashville, Arizona, it's just, neither team is getting me too excited right now. I think it's been really interesting that UC Saros has got to start the first two games instead of Pekka Rene, and that's turned into a best of three. You know, it's definitely the wild, wild west, and things are open. It was a great win for the Canucks last night, a huge
yes.
win.
Mm-hmm.
They reunited that Besser, Pettersson, Miller line, and boy, they look good. They, you know, Travis Green pulled a Sheldon Keefe and shuffled the deck, and it worked out well. The only problem for them is there's some mounting injuries here. Ferland left the game yesterday. We're not sure what the status is there. Antoine Roussel, you guys probably didn't stay up this late, but Antoine Roussel took a slap shot, you know, right off the helmet, and he looked very wobbly leaving the ice. So his status is unclear moving forward. And the big one is Tyler Toffoli. Unbeknownst to us, like pregame, he's like, oh, where's Tyler Toffoli? Apparently he's not playing. And that was a real surprise. We don't know the nature of his injury. Remember, they picked him up at the trade deadline. He was so good for Vancouver in the 10 games he played before the pause. And he was supposed to be that guy with Stanley Cup pedigree and that, you know, 25 goals score to really help augment their offense. And we don't know his status is moving forward. So I am concerned for Vancouver in that notion. So Edmonton seems the most healthy, and they've got the two best game breakers in Draisaitl and McDavid. So, you know, is that enough to carry the team? We'll wait and see, but certainly that's going to be a very tough out for anyone.
David, before we get you out of here, just quickly, between you and Ron hosting everything and different guys coming in and out of the panel and all the games going on, give us maybe a 60-second or two-minute insight into kind of the zaniness behind the scenes of the broadcast.
Well, listen, Scott, we're adjusting. It's a different world post-COVID, and the logistics are very different. To the viewer, I'm not sure how different it looks, but it's different behind the scenes. But bottom line is we were all so excited to walk back in the building, be in the studio, and watch playoff hockey. You know, we all longed for it and missed it, and it's been great. And one thing I'll say is we've had a lot of big voices, strong voices, and you have Brian Burke and Anthony Stewart and Cassie Campbell-Pascal and Bieksa and Rudy and Elliot. I mean, Chris Johnston. It's been good. A variety of thoughts, a variety of voices, and it's been really fun to be back in there. I was so excited on Saturday. It was, you know, since COVID hit, guys, Saturday might have been one of my favorite days by a long shot, just to be able to go in there and do what we do. I'm sure you guys are feeling that same level of excitement, being able to actually cover sports again. So it's been great. It's been different, but it's been great, Scott.